You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Justified After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Justified After Show.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Welcome. Oh, we got the tunes coming in. Thank you very much. Phil's in the booth for us, always providing entertainment for your listening pleasure. As you know, Bing is redoing, and we are doing another AfterBuzz TV podcast of Justified, Season 3, Episode 11, entitled Measures. I'm your host, John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by none other than Steve Bottomley.
I love doing.
And as I mentioned, in the booth is Phil Svitek. Phil, don't leave him hanging. There you go. Okay. And unfortunately,
trying to do too much, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I mean?
He's in the booth. He's like an octopus in there. He's got plenty of arms. Unfortunately, Tamara Berg is not with us. Hopefully, she'll be calling in. But if not, we'll wish her well with whatever she's doing at this moment, because I don't know what that is. But regardless, this episode, a lot of setup in this episode. We saw Quarrel seeking shelter at Noble's Holler, only to be thwarted by Boyd.
Before you guys start, I know everyone wants to do Justified, and I equally do too.
Yeah.
I do want to say real quick to the fans listening, you know, these guys obviously have been doing a fantastic job. I've kind of fell off the wagon, so to speak. But nevertheless, rate and comment these guys on iTunes. You know, it's the least you can do for us. And if you've rated and commented, then just tell a friend. You know what I mean? It helps the show. It helps us. The show meaning the actual show Justified. So, you know, just spread the word.
Yeah, spread the word.
Hey, I'm keeping track of the chat room. So if you're in the chat room and you have any comments or questions or
bring
ideas,
them up.
Or I will keep an eye on it and I will be your voice.
All right.
Unless you need an accent.
Well, you can provide that as well.
I'll do my best.
All right. So Quarrel seeking shelter at Noble's Holler, only be thwarted by Boyd and a taser gun. Dickie is continuing a quest for Mags' money.
Man,
me, what I want to start with is Art out in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, he gets out of the office because, you know, Art's great in the office. I love him in the office. But, man, first of all, just to get those two guys in scenes together more often, because their banter is fabulous. I love those two guys together. And the way their father-son thing.
They did need to get Art out of the office.
They
did. We always see him in the office. And yeah. Last time we saw him in the field, he was having to deal with the death of his friend, the marshal.
Oh, right.
Interrogating
exactly.
The suspect. So, yeah, it's always a lot of fun to see him in a different world. And an interesting thing about that, he was talking to Raylan about, you know, fatherhood.
Right, yeah, while they're in the car.
I have a father. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, I've seen him.
One taken.
Continue. Yeah, exactly.
And they hit that.
That's the kind of thing I love.
Yeah. They hit that beat a couple of times.
They did.
Well,
why don't we speak to it? Because you brought it up earlier. Because this, you were sensing the theme, or a theme in this was the sense of fatherhood. Because here Art is fathering Raylan to some degree, and a lot of times they're mentioning how Raylan's going to become a father.
Yeah, he brought it up with Lindsay.
Right.
And then
the sonogram.
Right. And interestingly, right after he says, you know, I'm going to be a father soon, in walks Detroit.
Yeah.
In walks Sarno and his flunky.
Yeah. And that deals with the father-son thing as well, because Theo and Sammy. So it's just they're all this thing running through it.
But when you realize you're going to be a dad, you start thinking differently.
Yeah.
You're not going to
be.
Can
you speak to that?
A little bit, yeah.
Really?
As soon as I found out I was going to be a dad, the first thing I had to sell that I wanted to sell was the motorcycle.
Oh, so you got rid of the motorcycle.
Yeah. So you do. You start thinking differently and stuff. I don't know if it's going to make Raylan think differently.
Well, you know what Art's hope was, and he said this in the car, was, you know, well, first of all, great lines today. I mean, there
awesome
always
lines.
Is, but, you know, we stopped the tape to write them down because we like them so much. You know, when you're, what do you call it? You're about to be a first-time father, you become unmoored.
Yes.
I mean, and, you know, clearly what Art is concerned about, that it, and he even says, please don't be more reckless than usual.
Yeah, and also don't
and that's
become,
what speaking to you thing,
and but, don't become your dad.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, because he kind of references it and starts it off with, you know, you've been out of control a little bit. You know, yeah, you got to get this thing under control.
You've been drinking more than usual and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a beat that they're kind of hitting.
Yeah.
I think it might go to what you were saying earlier about, you know, keeping it alive. Keeping the other characters that aren't on the scene alive.
Right, and reminding us where he is emotionally. He's got, there's no way he cannot have that in his brain because it's obviously affecting him. And just to how does that affect you? Do you become less reckless? Do you, or are you so freaked out by it that you do crazier things?
I think if we do see this baby, and again, that's up to debate.
Yeah.
You know, this is where Tammy needs to call
exactly.
it and have this debate. I think if we do, then absolutely he has to start making a change and adjustment. But if we don't ever see this, it's going to be just kind of an interesting storyline.
Yeah, because you know, clearly they could they could just use it just to, you know, pump up the idea and then have that taken away from him. Because as a character, what would that do to him? That the idea that your child didn't even get to see the light of day, and then what would that do to you as a person? Because, you know, obviously him being the lead, you want to put him in as much conflict and strife as you can.
Yep.
So either way, it's going to be difficult for him because obviously the baby comes is born, et cetera, and grows up. Then you've always got to have that.
There it is.
Thank you.
You're wrong, Tammy. We do get to see that. Well, we get to hear the baby.
Yeah, because if you're a marshal, now you have a child to protect. I mean, that you got to be freaked out that at any moment, all the people that you put behind bars or are in any way associated with in a negative way are going to try to take advantage of that and put you on the sidelines.
Does Art have any kids?
I don't know. I don't think he's ever discussed that, or at least I don't remember them ever talking about it on the show. My guess is he does. I mean, I think he did talk about being married, but I would assume he has kids. But
yeah, but it's never brought up. One of the things I loved about this first one of the first scenes with Art is trying to figure out how to write the report.
Yeah, that was another thing. They did that more than once. You know, I was like, okay, so here's how you're going to – okay, Raylan. So you shot that fireman, even though it's against –
it clearly against policy.
Yeah, so and they come up with the story, which is kind of true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the gray area.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's how you write it. So that's how you can get away with it.
Yeah.
So, and again, you know, kind of mentoring in a way, but also just saying, please just make my life a little easier because why do I always have to go to bat for you and deal with your nonsense?
No,
so.
I need your assist on this. When Raylan and Art went into the apartment, did Art take the guy out with the shotgun?
Yes.
Art did that.
Oh,
okay.
That's why at the end, when they're back in the conference room and they're writing up the reports, Art's so happy. He's going, wow, so you really have to go through this stuff every time? So he's not used to doing it, you know?
And Raylan
has
really
to do it every week.
Used to it.
So, and I like that Raylan says, oh, our stories kind of match. They're so lackadaisical about these things.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just liked the way their banter, again, going to the car when they were, before that, when Art says, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have to go with you. And Raylan's going, no. And he says, no way. Way?
Yeah. I like how they play those two off each other.
Yeah.
And there is they're not equal, but in moments they are equal.
Sure.
You know, like when they're both out in the field or whatever and sitting and talking.
Stuff.
Yeah,
great
exactly. It's just
great,
you know, like buddy stuff. And
exactly.
You know,
just, you know, when they're in the car, you're afraid of me getting shot. No, I'm afraid of me getting shot.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, and, you know, the timing and the rhythms on all that and stuff. It's really good stuff.
So it was good that they got Art out of the office.
Yeah, and thank God, because, you know, Raylan needed a backup in that room. You know, they got with Theo and... No, I'm sorry. I think it was henchmen or whatever, and they got, you know, they're trying to deal with bathroom boy, Donovan, at the end.
Yeah, what? That was an interesting bit where he headbutts.
Yeah.
Detroit.
Yeah.
The flunky.
Yeah.
I don't know that guy's name.
Yeah, we don't know him.
I'm thinking. I couldn't follow that beat. I couldn't follow that.
Why?
Yeah.
The only thing I thought of is that he's been in there for so long.
Yeah.
And who knows what's happened to him or what's going to happen to him. He's thinking, well, here's my chance to get out of here. So I'm going to take it. He didn't know anybody else was out there.
Mm.
So he just, you know, did the headbutt, took off. You know, why not? What's the downside of giving it a shot?
Yeah. It was, and evidently you can really tear a toilet apart pretty easily.
Well, I guess if you have enough energy behind it, why not?
I liked how, again, they're using Duffy's just sitting on the bed, mm-hmm. watching the whole thing go down.
Yeah.
He's just an observer.
The way they were sitting, just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hands up. Yeah. Just not even sure why he's there.
Exactly.
And again, we're talking about the, you know, how you gauge a scene based on who's in it. And
right.
Anytime Duffy is with Quarles,
yeah.
his response is so important to seeing how Quarles is spinning.
Right.
And he's spinning, but.
Because it's sociopathic and psychotic or whatever. I don't know whatever psychological term that Duffy fits into. But however crazy he is, the fact that he thinks Quarles is spinning out of control really freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he can recognize it means that's even crazier.
Right.
Because normally he's the kind of guy doing that kind of crap.
Yeah. It's like when you're flying and everything, you think everything's okay.
Yeah, until the flight attendant starts freaking out.
And then
this must be bad.
And they start strapping in and praying. Okay, now we're in trouble. So
what do you think they were trying to do with the whole art being out? It wasn't just to have those guys having fun and have the banter. I mean, sure, that's part of it. But do you think they were trying to push the father agenda just because the kids coming up, they just want to keep it alive? Or do you think they're doing it to set up the jeopardy that – of what might happen to Winona and the baby?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, okay, we have this storyline. We have to keep it alive.
Yeah,
we have to keep it going.
And thankfully they do, because so many shows don't. That pisses me off more than anything. Because it's like you set something up, and now you're never going to pay it off. You're never going to speak to it. That's crazy.
Right. And this show has always been really smart about, you know, where these guys are going to be.
Right.
Not in just the episode, but, you know, where are they going to be in season four? You know, and so I think they're obviously giving Raylan somewhere to go with a character.
Yeah.
And something to do instead of just being this, you know, superhero sort of Marshall guy. I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
So
welcome to my
world.
That's fine. We can move on to something else. Because I wanted to talk, because I wanted to talk about Detroit coming to town. So finally, you know, because of all the things that Quarles has done, we've got Theo saying, all right, that's it. Let's get rid of Quarles and cut our losses and move on.
Yeah.
So he sends Sarno and the thug.
This is the thing about that scene. When Sarno walks in...
Yeah, this is when he walks into the bar.
Michael Ironside. The problem with that scene is you spend half the time going, how do I know that guy? That guy was... Okay. And it turns out he's been in everything.
Yeah, he's been in everything.
Just IMDb Michael Ironside. And the reason you know him is because he's just been in everything. And he's awesome in everything.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking, okay, so you've got... Michael Ironside, you've got Timothy Oliphant, and then you've got this one guy in between.
Yeah.
And just being on the set, I'm wondering if this guy's like going,
oh, crap.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
No, I'm probably the one who's going to get offed here.
Exactly. More is less. Less
yeah,
is
if anything's going to happen.
What do I do? I mean, going up between these two guys that don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I was just feeling a little sorry for him.
Well, yeah, but and also I think it was great that they brought him in because, you know, they didn't need to Sarno could have done this all himself. But it allows you to have that buffer so that when Tim takes him and bashes his head on the bar, you know, that sets up a whole other thing because you wouldn't want to do that right away to Sarno.
No.
So it allows you that kind of physicality and making sure that conflict and tension stays alive and then to have that play off later because now Sarno's, okay, I know who I'm dealing with here.
Exactly. So, he knows the level of the game.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to, you know, lose his power in that moment. And again, right after he says, I'm going to be a dad soon, they walk in.
Right.
And... he's not at all concerned with who they are.
No.
And
he's not even sure who they are. Exactly.
Right, but he even starts to throw a dig thinking that they work for Sammy.
Yeah.
So he starts
the whole thing
to
about
dig.
The suits.
Right.
Yeah, where do you get your suits? Which is another thing that you just mentioned that they always want you to know. I mean, they use what they've already set up and they continue it because we'd already heard Sammy, you know, he told where we got his suits at the gallows or whatever the hell it is.
Our boss doesn't buy his suits.
Yeah, and they look like a sharks again, a little boy trying to be a a thug or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get a rise out of it. And I thought it was just interesting that, okay, you just acknowledge this, and then you turn around and you do this.
Yeah.
And so it kind of is showing me a little inner conflict of, really like, well, who do I have to give up to be this dad person?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Am I going to be reckless? And boom, how reckless is that?
Pretty damn reckless.
What? He's not ready to be the father, the quote, responsible father.
But it's always in the back of his head now. No. I mean, they keep hitting that thing.
Yeah, because how can you be the responsible father and be the marshal he's been?
Exactly.
I don't know how that's going to happen. Well, that'll be interesting how he kind of...
If Tammy were here, she's got the solution.
She does?
Well, she says the baby's not going to make it.
Oh, okay. That's true. That's true.
So,
that's true.
You know.
It'll be interesting to see how he, you know, assimilates those two things. But the other thing, just before that... because we have to talk the Lindsay thing, just because the whole her and him and the awkwardness of that,
the awkward
that
morning after.
Yeah, and he's, no, I'm just going to get some coffee. No, I'll make you some eggs, all that kind of stuff. And I loved it. Again, they played it really nicely with her because she goes, oh, you don't have to say it. Sorry, the whole thing. And just her lines, what was it? That she's heartless. How he heartlessly accepted the gift of her feminine wild, her feminine virtue. They had a lot of fun on this one. Writers had a lot of fun writing these lines.
There were a few ones where I
heartlessly accepted the gift of her feminine virtue.
I've got a few like Elmore with a question mark.
Yeah, is like, are they
man,
from
did
him
he take
or?
A pass on this? Because there's quite a few that of those sort of things. Also, Quarles, just his up with people attitude at times.
God, that was amazing. All right.
It's just over the top.
Yeah. So Detroit comes to town. I just wanted to finish
Detroit. Yeah, I'm bouncing.
No, that's okay. So am I. But Detroit comes to town, and these two guys. Now, I loved how not only did, Wynn played them. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Wynn played them.
Yeah. This was a – there was a lot of partnerships.
Yeah, we had a lot of alliances.
Alliances,
formed.
Yes. That you were thinking, well, what the hell?
Because, clearly Wynn is not sure how to deal with the Quarles thing because it's getting crazier and spinning out of control. So he's like, okay, I got to be probably still clear of that guy, but I can't piss him off.
Mm-hmm.
And now Detroit's coming to town. I definitely don't want to piss them off, and I got to get in good with them if I want them to help me with the next step.
Right. So he's in a position.
They are just.
And he's got to figure out how do I cut a deal and not die.
Right.
And not have them pull on me, and yet not be in a place of like weakness because that's not what these guys respect.
No, they don't respond.
And I think what's happening is Sarno and his flunky, whatever his name is, Mr. Noni.
Thug. We'll call him Thug. Like thug. Doug, but it's Thug.
They're kind of discovering what Quarles discovered, which is they're not hicks.
No.
And they kind of know what's going on a little sooner than you do.
And, Sarno's been around the block. I loved when he was in the RV and they're having a discussion with Wynn. And Wynn's got the gun under the table. But before you know he's got under the table, Sarno goes, hang on.
Yeah. He doesn't talk this way unless he's got
our nuts.
Yeah.
And then the gun comes out. So he clearly, the guy's been around. I mean, that was nice. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was. And it was a nothing personal moment. Yeah. It's just like, guys, we're just doing business here.
Exactly.
I know. And I saw it as like a thing of respect where this guy, like, we know who you are.
Yeah.
We're just, is exactly what Wynn was doing. I want to cut a deal.
Right.
But I don't want to die in the process.
Right. So I send you there and, hey, you take him out. He takes you out.
And then Wynn sees this opportunity, so when he gets on the phone with them.
Yeah, but before that, the whole ear thing, that was great.
That was one of my Elmer lines.
Like, yeah.
You know, did he pull that up? Or again, I didn't.
Is it in one of Elmore's books? I don't know, but I love that. Yeah, he carries around this human ear and whatever he wants to make. Starts talking into the ear. Oh, what's he say?
That line right there, because you don't know if he's being condescending.
Yeah.
Or if he's really interested, what would somebody say to an ear?
Yeah.
It's not important.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, and the point's made. I guess it really doesn't matter if a guy pulls out a human ear.
No. But yeah, an odd little moment that you just kind of think about.
Yeah.
Think about.
But then he gets they get the drop on him. They get the stealth on him. So the Ironsides gets taken out of the picture for the time being because, Raylan sneaks up on him. So they're out of the picture, at least for the rest of the episode. Obviously, they'll be back next week, and probably I'm assuming it'll be in the finale.
Yeah, because he didn't really do anything wrong. I mean, they're just going to drop him.
That's
in the
what I'm saying.
The,
for me, this was a setup. I mean, it was a really good setup episode. I mean, a lot of stuff happening, but you can see it all. Like, oh,
all geez, the alliances.
People are coming in. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Things are alliances. And things are changing. And it's like, whoa, how are they going to resolve all this?
Right, right. And so. and now you've got, you know, Boyd in three different camps.
Yeah.
And you know Duffy trying to work his deal.
Right.
And that brings us to our favorite Bennett.
Let's do it. Let's get into Dickie.
The thing about Dickie is I always forget how much I enjoy watching him until he comes back.
Yeah, and then you just
go, that guy.
Yeah.
With his haircut.
Oh, his hair is amazing. It's like they shaved his head or something, but it was just all matted and.
Remember, you know what the moment when I was saying, you know, the problem with the earlier scenes is like trying to figure out who Michael Ironside, how come you've seen him so much, you know, who is that guy? Same thing with Dickie's hair. You just spend so much time looking at this thing going, how do you, what, was that, did you do it yourself?
Yeah,
did
so
you
how
have
do
a cellmate?
Yeah.
I mean, did nobody think to just keep,
so
what?
It takes you a second to pay attention to the scene because you're going, what the hell happened
exactly.
to him? He was in prison. What the hell did they do to him in prison? It's like a big old cow
and then
actually
like,
licked his head.
Yeah, like it was a salt lick until.
Exactly.
And then you're seeing how the hair around it's kind of all weird and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I don't know, maybe I'm just. A little too fascinated with
and
it.
Just like there was that weirdness, the little weird thing with ear, just his little weirdness when he's leaving prison that you pointed out.
That little step
his little
back.
Step. That was just as weird as you know, Quarles' little bye-bye. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's like these little nuggets.
And I would love to know
how many
were just like, let's just do it. Let's just do it.
Yeah,
and based on, you know, past interviews,
yeah, it seems like
probably
yeah,
a lot of them.
Yeah. He's a good one.
So Dickie's on the hunt.
Yeah, he leaves, and Errol's there, and he's ready to give him his cooler.
Would there be something in there I have not seen?
He still has no interest. I thought, you know, Errol, you know, slaps him.
Yeah, because he was disrespecting
Limehouse, which is
Limehouse.
Very interesting. And, of course, we got Tim and Rachel watching. So that sets up the whole thing that Tim and Rachel are there. They've been there because they're obviously going to watch Dickie to find out where the money is.
You really, at this point, you kind of need a flow chart because Rodney comes back
that we haven't seen since
Mags was alive.
No, he was here in this season because they were trying to sell Boyd's ruined, moldy marijuana crop.
That's right.
So
wow, that was this season?
That was this season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seemed like it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I know.
So he's back with his boys.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't think, I think that's it. For Rodney, I don't think he's going to come back around.
Not for now.
He cut his deal.
First of all, the feds are onto him, so it's like, you know, nah, I don't think I'm going to deal with this. The feds know about the money, the whole thing, so he's probably just saying, you know, I got other things to do.
Right.
So, but although I thought that the way that the feds got to them was nice, because that was a good scene for Rachel.
It was great to see Rachel and Tim, and it was, you know, Rachel.
I love Rachel.
The guy in the nuts. Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
whenever you start, like the last time we saw her was at Nobles Hall when she was explaining, you know, where she grew up and all that kind of stuff. So you got some nice juicy tidbits of her life.
Yeah.
But this, I just love the way, you know, she's just so calm, and but the way she plays it is you're not exactly sure. It looks like she could at any moment take you out.
She hasn't been around lately.
No.
Her and Tim both have been not there, and it's kind of like Dickie. When they show up, you go, oh, cool, yeah, they're here.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
so,
that's cool.
It's nice.
So that was a great way to get them into the room.
It was, and it was also interesting because we've seen Raylan with Tim and how, you know, Tim says, it's like working with an eight-year-old or eighth grade, whatever he said. So, and there's this, you know, Tim kind of makes fun of Raylan for good reason, and then but you get to see how Tim works with Rachel. It looks totally different. I mean, they look like they're much more professional. He doesn't have as much disrespect for Rachel as he does for Raylan.
Well, again, you know, Raylan's the outsider.
That's true. No,
you know,
but he's the outsider from the Hollers.
Yeah, but he came up from Miami.
That's true. And he causes a lot more grief than Rachel does. So Rachel seems much more professional than Raylan does. But anyway, I enjoyed the fact that they were showing these two, their relationship, these two marshals, in their relationship and how it differs from Tim and Raylan's relationship as marshals. I just thought that was nice.
Yeah.
So you got to see them much more professional.
They're a lot more comfortable with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like there's more of a team
between
those two.
Yeah.
So, but it's great to see them again. And hopefully they're going to be instrumental.
So, of course, Dickie, you know, tries to get Ronnie to help him. Then he has to go to Ellen May to find out where the heck the money is. And Ellen Bay cuts a deal. Okay, I'll tell. She tells him first.
Yeah.
And then says, but you have to promise me something.
But that was an interesting line.
What's that?
Well, she says, you got to promise me that you make me queen.
Yeah.
And they end on that.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, oh, that's really an interesting drop.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going with that.
I don't know either.
So
but
if they're setting something up or if that's just because she's just so tired of the life she's been living and she just wants out. I mean, I can't imagine why she wouldn't, but...
The way they had it written, the way that they shot it, the way that they let it just hang there, it's like it's a setup for something. And I'm racking my head going,
I can't see that happening.
And nor do I. But then again, I didn't see, you know, the bullet coming back, you know. Yeah. So you just in shows like this, you do tend to like listen closely and watch closely.
Wait a minute, because what does that mean? Because they rarely waste a line like that.
Where are you going? What are you dropping in here?
And you know, then at the end of the show, particularly when Tim and Rachel get the warrant, they take the cooler money away, and Errol and Dickie are left alone.
Mm-hmm.
And they make the pact together,
right,
to go after the money.
Yeah, so
Errol's going against Limehouse, which I was not expecting that, especially with Dickie. Well, although they made a really great connection. I thought the fact that Errol was talking about how Limehouse doesn't want to change with the times, which is exactly what Dickie was pissed off about Mags.
Mm-hmm.
So they both had that in common, is that they're tired of living behind somebody and not being able to, you know, move up and do what they want to do. And all that kind of stuff. So there's their connection.
There is. I think we need to, or I will, at predictions.
Okay, we'll talk about that
because that's like, you know.
Yeah, it's like bedfellows, man. Weird. I mean,
there was a lot of that tonight, though. There was that.
There was Wynn trying to set something up with Theo. There was. You know, and Boyd setting something up with Wynn. I mean, there was all this, you know, moving around. Sheriff Napier had to, you know, work with Boyd in order not to get shot. So, I mean, we can see why. But there was a lot of alliances being made, so which is great. That's what I meant about everything being a setup, because now we get to see how they're setting up for the finale, and we'll see how they resolve all these storylines.
Now, when they finally got the search warrant.
Right.
That was it on that storyline. We didn't follow them out to see if money's there. But
no, I imagine
Raylan
that's
knows the money's not there.
Well, at least that's
and based on coming events,
right?
The money's not there.
And so,
we'll
get to
see.
But everybody's going after. It's always been about Mags' money. I mean, and so, you know, we're gonna find
Limehouse
out.
Knows where it is, and he also knows that what he's giving Dickie is not the full amount, and Dickie knows.
And so does Errol.
So is Errol, but we've not heard Errol say.
Yeah, there's more money there, and here's where it is. We haven't heard him say that.
We haven't heard him say that.
But we do. Errol's obviously saying, look, we're going to need a crew, and you know, his initials are Boyd Crowder. So it was like, oh, man.
Again, the alliance.
Exactly. This is going to be awesome. Get Boyd with Dickie.
Because the first time we see the first line in Boyd's character tonight is, I'm going to kill Dickie.
And what I'm going to... What does he say? I'm going to do it slowly.
Yeah.
I'm going
to
do
it. Yeah. And that was an interesting thing, too. There seems to be some agitation in his crew.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's Johnny being nervous about a conversation he had with Ava when, you know, at the bar about he likes blondes and worried that she has that over him.
I'm sure that's part of it. But the other part of it is that they've always been like that. I mean,
she did hit one of devil with his friend.
Yeah, and before that, though, Boyd, you know, when he went to apologize to Johnny, there's not a lot of love lost there. There's family, so they'll probably do what family does in the holler, but there's not a lot of love lost between them. It just doesn't seem to be anyway. So they've always had that kind of conflict running between them.
Yeah,
I'm sure because Johnny wants to step up as well.
It was hit a couple of times in this episode, so I wonder if they're kind of setting up, you know, as the fire gets hotter.
Yeah,
if there's going to be some cracks along all this. Man, look, we're coming to the end of the season.
Yeah,
so people are going to start dying.
That's right.
So whoever got a better gig.
So speaking of dying, let's go to quarrels, because if anybody's killing people, it's quarrels these days.
God.
So
I'm going to miss him.
I'm going to miss him. Yeah.
Oh, God.
And it starts out with him having to go out of town. Basically, he's talking to Wynn and in the RV, and he's going to have to go to Harlan County. That's why he's leaving. And it just so happens he's leaving just as Detroit's coming to town. So
yeah. We have
to chase them. But he's going there to get his money back from Napier. Because I just think that's hysterical. First of all, I say, "What? Wait a minute here. You're going to get the money."
Do you not know how elections work?
Yeah, say like, what? No, there's, you know. I love that he goes, "You don't have to give me the same bills, just the same amount,
something equivalent."
And you know, it's funny because I'm looking at the sheriff. I'm going, "You're sheriff. Why don't you just arrest the guy?
Mm.
You're ready to. I mean, you're planting evidence. You're doing all these things. Why not just take him out?"
I don't know if it's because he knows so much. I don't know if it's because – I don't know if Napier knows how crazy he is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he's ever been exposed to that. But, yeah, that's a – you know.
Because
he could certainly lock him up on any charge
he was ready
he
to
wants.
Take out Tanner, remember? He told Tanner, meet me here at a secluded
right,
spot.
Yeah.
He had the shovels. He had the whole thing in the trunk. And it's
right.
like I don't know why he doesn't just take quarrels. This is the one thing I wish they would answer for me because I don't get this.
Mm.
If this sheriff is already that corrupt – and he's going to kill Tanner. Why doesn't he just kill Quarles? Why does he even bother with this nonsense?
It might be he just kind of thinks he's below him. It might be he's, well, then
but
Tanner's
below
I know.
Quarles. So
yeah.
It's just, you know, it's like just
maybe he's afraid of him. I don't know.
Off this guy.
I'm with you.
So, you know.
Clean that beat up. And
yeah, I'm just give me a reason because I don't get it now because, you know, he's a dirty sheriff, and this guy's causing way too much grief. And if I don't put an end to this, he's going to end me.
No one's going to care as he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. He's not – I mean, he probably knows enough now that Chicago's – I mean, sorry, Detroit has left him alone. So he's alone. There's
mm-hmm.
nobody backing him.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the downside?
Well, the downside is we lose Quarles.
Well, I know, exactly. But that is the only downside. But if they had given it some sort of –
yeah, a reason.
You know, yeah, exactly, because that was the thing I wanted. I think they missed, and I wish they had paid it off somehow, or at least spoke to it.
He's so much fun to watch now that you yes. know that he's spinning out of control, because everything,
yeah.
every little movement,
yeah.
it's got
and
like,
it gets
when,
worse.
When
gets
he puts
worse
that
worse.
Glass down,
yeah, you
and
can
you
see
crap. I was actually waiting to see that glass crack.
Yeah, I was too.
And you're just going, oh, my God, he's just this close.
Yeah,
just,
and as Detroit comes down now, I don't have any safe harbor there. I can't go home because there, and the feds are here, and boom, the sheriff, I got nothing.
I had nowhere to go.
And where is he? The only place he can go is Noble's Holler, which I find hysterical, because
yeah.
the irony of him having to go there for safe harbor, you know, that just cracked me up.
And Limehouse was not happy to see him unless he settles his tab.
Yeah, he's still, you know, not good to put a man in further debt until he's played the one, yeah, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, he brought up like the whole thing about being in a slaughterhouse and the smell of blood and the knife and the cleaver, whatever it was. And you saw the hand twitch.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the hand twitch, reminding us again. So.
Quarles rarely answers direct questions.
No.
He will always deflect.
Yeah.
If it's anything that he needs to keep, close.
Yeah.
So that was a great opportunity at Limehouse where
he did ask
a specific question and he did, it's great how you have your meetings here.
Yeah.
And I love that cleaver going into the wall.
Oh,
I'm not holding it now.
But, okay, yeah. But the other thing I liked about that particular scene is what Quarles said, like when Limehouse figures out everything that's been going wrong with him. And Quarles goes, was that a guess? Because it was a good one. Such a...
They gave him so many of those lines and opportunities.
I know.
When they look through the peephole.
Yeah.
And he's smiling.
Yeah.
And they let him go so over the top.
Yeah.
That you don't know.
Let's talk about the scene, because now he's going to the drug dealers.
Mm.
And you see these guys and these shit kickers with his katana and everything and his shirt off and his stupid tats and everything, just being a weirdo. And he's in there, that suit and everything. Hi! I mean, it's like he came right out of, Pleasantville.
I thought, and he's doing a little stutter thing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
And I'm watching him going, okay, an affection? Is it on purpose? Are you trying to disarm these guys?
Yeah.
Are you using these tools? And
he's just
having
a ball.
You know what's going to end up.
Well, yeah. But, I'm thinking in terms of the actor at the moment. I'm going...
Oh, yeah.
First of all, I don't know who came up with that. If that's the writers who did that, or if he went, what if we did that? Because I love to know how they do those, because a lot of times I think about them on the day or whatever. But the fact that he went in there and then just went with it, like, hi, guys. Hi. Are we playing bridge? What are we doing here?
So, knowing he's this close to snapping.
Yeah. No. And knowing that, at any moment here, I'm going to kill everybody because I'm going to get this money.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's,
but he's playing it just having a ball.
God.
I'm just thinking as the actor, I'm going, how much fun would that be? Because you get to, you know, you're this psychopathic killer, and you're playing it like this.
Yeah.
How much fun is that?
It's got to be as much fun as like when Tim Oliphant gets to, you know, smack talk the Detroit guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then lay a guy out, and any actor would. And I think the danger there is just going over the top with it.
And he didn't.
And no, he didn't. This is the one character
where pulled it back just enough.
Yeah, going over the top is actually right.
Right.
For this guy.
Well, yeah, and the closer we get to the end anyway, you know, they've already set up that he's going to be going up. So they've
because
done a really good job.
Because he's not always there. No. He goes there and then he drops back to normalcy.
He's chewing oxy. That's even worse.
Right.
But we have to speak to the end of end of that scene because you and I both burst out laughing.
Okay, so I got to tell my story on that.
Yeah.
So I'm watching it with Sharon, my wife, beautiful woman. And, you know, getting her caught up and like, okay, so, and then the end of that scene comes in where Quarles just takes a guy out in the most brutal way.
Yeah. Using the katana,
and he ends up just basically splitting the guy's skull open and everything.
And getting blood sprayed on his face.
Says his line.
Yeah. He says, "What a dick."
And I'm floored. I'm laughing. I'm like, "Oh my God, look what a shirt." Oh my God.
Yeah, your
God.
Wife is horrified and you're laughing.
I'm like, well, no. You see, the reason that's funny because she's not like followed along. She's like, okay.
She's still disgusted by the act of violence, and you're enjoying it and having a good time.
It's such a good line.
It is a good line. It's, you know, it's shocking. It's not something you expect.
He's,
and again,
blood splatter all over him. It's like, what?
And played a little under.
Yeah.
What a dick. And then just drying his face off. And I'm going, what? Now he's afraid of blood? I mean, they had to paint a whole room
because
it was bloody. But no, not in this environment, he didn't want anything because he had a suit on and the whole thing. And you know how he likes it done. He likes it when he's naked.
Yeah. But it was great to see his gun come out.
Yeah.
Great to have that beat back in there where, hey, that thing is working and he knows how to use it because obviously, you know, Raylan's going to meet
that. He is
good
with that thing, man.
He is good with it. So that was an awesome.
What's that?
It was just such an awesome scene.
What a dick. Yeah, it's just like not an Elmore Leonard line, or at least it didn't seem like it, but it was perfect for the character.
Yeah, wouldn't you love to be in the room where they're going, okay, what's he say? What did he say?
Because normally he would just the gun would go off, he'd get killed, and then you would end the scene.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been a line.
I just loved it.
What a dick. It's perfect.
It is.
And oh man. Just good stuff. All right, well, we got to talk about Boyd now. Because Boyd, I thought, did the best chess play today. He was the guy that was figuring, you know, because in the beginning, they thought this and that, and, you know, and they find out the drug dealer's dead, blah, 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 blah. And he knows exactly where to go to. And then, you know, he goes to Napier and, you know, basically pulls a Chinatown with the whole knife in the nostril thing.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be an homage.
Definitely.
The next time you see Napier, he's going to
have a big old
thing.
It was going to be something like that, but he didn't have to. But he just threatened.
I guess Napier saw the movie.
Yeah, well, it's an expensive, you know.
It is.
It's an expensive. It's an expensive stunt. A lot of makeup, a lot of blood involved. Well, it's not enough time for that.
This was kind of a thing where, for as much setting up as that was going along, Boyd was kind of in the background on this episode.
He was, but
in the background. Everybody else was in the foreground, and he was just moving around.
But then you saw him by the end of the movie. He's running it. End of the show.
Yeah.
Now he's in the driver's seat. He's got Wynn here. He's got this here. I got the Quarles. And you saw, that's what I liked about it, is that he started way back here.
Mm-hmm.
Then he started really looking at the chessboard going, okay, where's my play? How do I do this? How do I line that? And he lines everything up to, boom, I got Quarles. I should have killed you outside the police department, or at least taken you away and then killed you. I didn't, but now, now I got you.
He thinks he does. And at this moment, he thinks it was to his advantage because Quarles is 200 grand alive.
Right.
By the way.
And everybody, I love everybody saying,
don't say I didn't warn you.
Don't say I didn't warn you. It's like, oh, geez, what is this guy got to
do? That was the other theme that kept coming up in this one, is everybody saying,
it's going to be a bloodbath.
It's always about Quarles.
Yeah. He's going to kill a bunch of people. It's going to be a bloodbath.
It's going to be, he's got to have a lot of bullets for that little gun.
If that's what he does when he's in his happy time, you know, with his high guys, you know, and he takes out those two guys, now he's pissed. What's going to happen now?
I know, that's another prediction that I want to talk about is regarding Quarles' predicament.
Uh-huh.
But they kind of used Boyd way in the back.
Right.
And you're right. He just paced himself right up to running it.
Put him, yeah. And it's kind of similar to how he got the sheriff election overturned, in a sense. I mean, it was that thing behind the scenes. It was almost like he was playing it behind the scenes a little bit.
Quite a bit on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and it shows you,
but he didn't need to. That was the thing about this. This was about all these odd alliances, and he just kind of sat in the middle.
Yeah. They even used the terms, you know, because he said, "You're my partner," at least in this. So he's making a partnership with Wynn, Errol and David, Dickie making partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and Dickie trying to make one with Rodney. I mean, it's just all happening. It's like
Duffy trying to make a deal with
Theo,
Adam Arkin.
Yeah. But by the way, he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just he's like, yeah, you know, he's
you're
so
you're commenting
over
on the intro shot, and I'm like, going, like, yeah, yep, exactly. Just follow the ass right on in.
Yeah. It's like, oh, my God.
And then the girl in the background, we have no idea if she was
I think it was the same woman, because you saw her going down the steps. I don't know if it was or wasn't, but the point is, he was so Adam played it so, like, as his character was so over it. Yeah, I'm sending another guy down there. Okay, fine. You deliver him, then you can step up. He's more interested in a sandwich than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, seriously, they're not even the woman that's there.
But being the businessman,
yeah,
you know, no, because I don't know you
exactly.
It was good. Hopefully, he ends up down in.
Well, I think that you gotta be. You gotta bring him down.
You got to.
I mean,
come on.
It's not fun enough if he's just up by the phone.
No.
Oh, you gotta bring him down.
I don't know why yet, but he should come down.
All right. Well I'm good.
You know, there was one moment that I just thought was interesting. Quarrels with Napier.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting how they filmed and set that scene up, because when he's walking out and Napier says, "You want to poke that bear?"
Oh, yeah.
And then he stops and he goes,
That bear poked me. Right.
That's a great end line. I mean, that's where you kind of go, okay, move on.
Boom, right.
But then they changed the music and they reset the camera, the angle, and they had even more after that. And I was thinking about it. They're really good at that, at taking what you think is the end line, giving it that moment, so you still have that sort of
feeling
and the emphasis on the line.
What did they
do
afterwards? I don't recall.
Afterwards, God, I don't know, because I said pacing on post line. So. But they were able to. I remember that they did adjust some music, and you know, change things up.
So they reset everything, music, angle.
Yeah. And they were able to kind of start a whole new scene within the scene.
Wow.
After, and then ended up with another good line on, you know, when they were leaving, which again I don't remember because
we can't write everything down.
Because I'm a dick. What a dick.
Okay, so, the one line that we did go back for was Art after they shoot the thug. and Raylan's questioning him, and they realize, oh man. And then Raylan says, "You ever think God's laughing at you?" You remember? Did you write down Art?
Oh God, I thought you were.
No, I got it.
Oh good.
Yeah. Let me see what it is. Oh yeah, God's laughing at you. Why? Just because we shot the guy that's looking to kill the guy that you're just dying to be dead.
We can just sit there and laugh on the lines.
It's like, wow, that's good. I know it's silly, but I just liked writing it down.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to use it. No, I'm not really. I'm just kidding. I'm not.
But it does go to how good the writing is and how they're able to set the lines up with the right characters.
Right.
You know, and it also goes to how smart Timothy Oliphant is as a producer on this to say, look, don't give me all these cool lines.
Give them all.
Spread them out. So that everybody looks good, consequently, I look good.
Right.
Which, you know, a lot of guys don't understand.
That's the Jack Benny philosophy. Sorry to bring it way back into the 50s, but Jack Benny did that all the time.
Well, speaking of the 50s and 49, I do want to, you know, do a little shout out, since it is bluegrass and Kentucky sort of thing, that Earl Scruggs from Foggy Mountain Breakdown, which was used in Bonnie and Clyde and Beverly Hillbillies, and he played the banjo in it. He did die this week. He was 88. But if you want to hear some awesome bluegrass, just go ahead and bring that up from that era. He wrote it in 49.
Okay.
And they've used it a lot. So, unfortunately, he has passed, but his music shall live forever.
All right. Well, you know what? Before we go to our break, let me real quick, because we didn't even talk about her, the woman, the drug dealers, the woman they brought in. Again, they great. They always bring in these characters.
Oh,
probably
LMA?
Them for one scene. No. The woman who was talking about the dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I swear to God, it was like they went, Neil McDonough's got these really blue eyes. Looks like a husky.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, we have to bring a woman. You know what? She loves dogs. They just, like, they geared everything for this character just so they could get the reference about his blue eyes like a husky.
How does Boyd find out who does this without going to the police? Well, there's a lady.
Yeah.
And she's a neighbor. She doesn't like him. Why? Because
they killed my dog. But he got back at him because he sent a husky.
Mm-hmm. Now you're a husky. And I thought they did just enough of the who's on second sort of thing about not understanding.
Yeah, exactly.
Just enough where you're not going, oh, for God's sakes, just get to the point.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had their, you know, their lines and their moments.
But they did the same kind of thing with Dickie and Rodney. Because Dickie was going around spinning the yarn and finally Rodney would get pissed. All right. But there was a difference between how Rodney did it and how Boyd did it. Boyd was much more patient. And, you know, it's like, here I am, ma'am. Now, how did you find that out, ma'am?
Because Boyd was looking for an angle. Boyd was seeing how is this going to help me?
Rodney didn't have the patience. He just, get to the wife.
Okay, come on, give him a break. He's dealing with Dickie.
That's true.
Who does?
All right. Speaking about give him a break, Phil, that's going to take us to our break. So if you would kindly please take us to commercial.
After Buzz TV.
Hi, I was once like you, a lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzzTV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds, like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzzTV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series, with over 60 different after-shows, from Boardwalk Empire, to American Idol, to Vampire Diaries, to Real Housewives, and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV after shows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. What do you want to buzz about?
And we're back. All right, so here's the news.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, Phil, you're going to have to help me out with it because I don't know all the particulars. But next week, very special podcast, we will have a very special guest.
Ooh.
Erica Tazell, who plays Rachel, will be joining us. Is she joining us live or will she be is she on set? I can't remember.
No. She's going to be in studio here. She's going to be watching right next to John and Tammy. What's up?
Awesome.
And then after watching, she'll probably go home. Because she'd be like, I don't want to do this.
Because these guys know way more about this show than I do.
Well,
this would be great because, first of all, she's a great character. She's a wonderful actress. I mean, I love seeing her on screen. I can't wait to hear, the things that they go through on set, how she prepares, how she got the gig, the whole thing. This will be really good.
And she's really great. I mean, both of you have had a chance to meet her.
Yes.
And for those of you who want extra content with Erica, go to check out our Bridesmaid after show on AfterBuzzTV.com. It's our movie edition version, and she sat in and talked about Bridesmaid.
She joined us at the Oscar gift suite AfterBuzz.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful.
Extremely charming.
I will hopefully call in. My schedule puts me somewhere else.
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be in Vegas.
Yeah. He's headlining.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing my stand-up routine. It's basically set up of all the jokes I forget halfway through.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Hilarious.
So everybody tune in next week for Erica.
But also, you know, chat room it. If you got something you want to ask, she's going to be here.
And she's
going to
be here.
Somebody will be watching the chat room.
So write to us. Let us know what you want us to ask or what do you want to know about so we can ask her. And we'll get those questions to her and then we'll provide them for you. So, all right, we got to go to predictions.
I'm jealous I won't be here, but you guys are going to do an awesome thing.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
All right, what do you got?
Well, my predictions kind of revolve around all the alliances.
Yeah.
And my first prediction is almost kind of like a question, but the Dickie and Errol alliance.
Right.
And my prediction is Errol's playing them.
You think so?
I think at the end of the day, I think Errol's going to turn, because if it's between Dickie and Limehouse,
yeah.
If you're Errol,
yeah.
Where are you going to place your bet? So yeah. I think he's positioning Dickie because Limehouse wants him. So you think
Limehouse and Errol, or Limehouse concocted this thing, told Errol, okay, here's what you're
going
to do.
I think so. I think there is something going on where Dickie's kind of figuring that out.
It's a great turn. Because, you know, the reason why I think it's a great turn is they really painted Errol as somebody who's a little disgruntled, doesn't like the fact that he's not able to step up. Limehouse is running the show, and he keeps slapping Errol down.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's a great connection to Dickie, because Dickie had the same thing going on with Mags.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But so, like I said, at the end of the day, are you going to go up against Limehouse?
It would be a great play by Limehouse. It would be nice to.
Now, my other prediction I don't have an answer for. I'm just really curious. How does Quarles get out of chained to a bed? My prediction is, who comes in to save him?
No, he's not going to get saved. He's going to somehow get out.
He's going to somehow get out. You know,
which is why they're going to pay off. Don't say I didn't warn you.
But I'm just like, oh, my God. Okay, yeah. So I gotta find out.
Yeah, I have no idea what that prediction. I still think that Limehouse has got to gut somebody or somehow use the knife. We got to pay that off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still holding out that it's Dickie. Although the way they're painting it now, it looks like Dickie's actually going to survive. You know, but who knows? But I'm still going to hold to that prediction.
You know, they've mentioned a couple of times about, you know, being fed to the hogs.
Yeah,
because that was what Ellen May told Dickie. Right. That, you know, that's where he's going to end up if he goes up against Limehouse. So.
Wow. Okay.
So we will see. Limehouse wants Dickie bad. Well, everybody wants Dickie bad, so.
Yeah. I'm not really want to touch that line.
Again, that's in my show.
Yeah,
come see me. I'm not in any casino. I'm kind of just wandering the street.
Just on the strip.
But it's really funny if you know the whole joke.
Hey, wait. No, I got another one. Come here. Okay. Got into a bar.
Come back to me.
All right. So, Phil, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tell everybody where they can see you if they want. Right here at AfterBuzz.
Right here. Go to AfterBuzzTV.com. It's your one-stop shop for all things AfterBuzz TV.
Right.
Where you want, whether you know, it's a portal to Facebook or Twitter.
Thank you for listening. Do us a favor if you would, please. All we ask is that you give us a comment, let us know, and then write in. You know, let us know what you want to hear, what you want to see, that kind of thing. And
could I tell everyone a secret?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Please.
All right. So this isn't the first part. Isn't the secret? Maria Menounos.
Team Enough.
She is on ABC's Dancing with the Stars, and you guys should vote for her. Here's why: because the longer she stays on the show, the more we can kind of behind her back spend more money on AfterBuzz and get more cool things.
Yeah. So
true story.
Great. Now it's not so secret
anymore.
Yeah,
that's not too much of a secret.
Great.
Now.
You know that's going to get back to her. It is kind of true.
Yeah, I've got a kid going into college, so I got all kinds of stuff we can spend money on.
All right.
Hey, you can find me on Twitter or Vegas next week.
There you go.
If you happen to be there. I don't know what my Twitter handle
and
is.
You can't find me anywhere. I'm off the grid. But anyway, we want to thank you so much for listening. Next week, we'll have Erica Tizell in the studio with us. Please join us for that.
And the smart half over here.
And
Tammy will be back.
So on behalf of Phil's VTech, Steve Bottomley, I'm your host, John Comerford, saying goodbye.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.